Good morning. And thank you all so much for being here on this day. I appreciate it very, very much. And deep thanks.
Can
Need volume?
you tap it, perhaps? It's all okay. Just turn it up.
1, 2, 3. Testing. I always wanted to say that. Deep thanks to Galen Roshi for her teaching and her encouragement and her guidance and for her assistance with this talk. When I was asked to give this talk, I explained that there were two topics I was very interested in at the moment and asked which of them she thought would be more appropriate for talk. I was particularly interested in the idea of Dharma gates. And I was particularly interested in the idea of the role of ritual in Zen. And I asked which of these she would find would prefer as a talk. And she said, well, why not talk about Dharma gates as rituals? And this is one of many reasons she's avid and I'm not. So that is what I'd like to speak about today. We regularly chant, Dharma gates are boundless. What does that mean? Dharma gates are those moments or events. I really need to have these up where I can see them. Sorry. Dharma gates are those moments, are those events that give us a glimpse of what the universe is truly like. Now, this is a little complicated because we are always, in fact, in the Dharma. We always, in fact, are the Dharma. But sometimes, usually, we don't see this. A Dharma gate is a moment of access when we can see what is true. Some possibilities are obvious. When we read a sutra, when we hear a good Dharma talk, when we have to deal with pain or anger or loss in our lives. But in doing some reading, I'd come across some other possibilities. In Shobo Genzo, fascicle 96, 108 gates of realizing Dharma. Let me say this, for some of you that may not have been coming here a while, our particular style of Zen, Soto Zen, was brought to Japan from China by the great monk and the founder of our style in Japan, Dogen. And so I'm going to be talking about Dogen a lot. And so when you hear Dogen, that is the monk that in the 13th century brought this style of Zen to Japan. Writing about Dharma gates, Dogen lists among 108 Dharma gates, rejoicing, love of enjoyment, joy, seeking extensive learning. Okay. I had not thought of these things as Dharma gates, and they set me to thinking instead about all the positive experiences that can be Dharma gates. So pain, loss, grief, anger. Of course, those are opportunities for practice, but seeking enjoyment, joy, that was a whole new way to think about Dharma gates, and I wanted to explore that. Perhaps later in question and answer, we can explore what some of our Dharma gates have been in our lives. When I first heard of Zen, this would be in the late 60s, it seemed to me to be free of many things that bothered me about the religions I knew. It was not authoritarian. There was no supernatural deity. It didn't seem to have a lot of mindless rituals. It didn't place emphasis on blind obedience. And some of those impressions are mostly correct, but I was surprised when I became a practitioner to learn there is, in fact, a great deal of ritual in Zen. And I also learned that I loved this ritual and that I was deeply moved by it. And so I became curious about the history and the role of ritual in Zen. So where did I get this idea that Zen was without ritual? Well, it's not just something I made up. It's been a common understanding in the West. Partly, we are a very individualistic and materialistic society, and so this is a comforting belief to us. But this belief was also spread in the West by Japanese teachers. In particular, this was the view of the great teacher D.T. Suzuki, not the same as Shunryu Suzuki, who is the lineage in which we stand, but D.T. Suzuki lived 1870 to 1966. At this time, Japan was modernizing, and many Japanese citizens wished to present Japan as a modern nation to the West. And in Buddhism, this was expressed in a movement called Buddhist Modernism. Suzuki was very much a part of this movement, and the Zen he presented was free of superstition and ancient outdated beliefs. He writes in an introduction to Zen Buddhism, "Is Zen a religion? It is not a religion in the sense that the term is popularly understood. For Zen has no god to worship, no ceremonial rites to observe, no future abode to which the dead are destined. As to all those images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and Devas and other things one comes across in Zen temples, they are like so many pieces of stone or wood or metal. They are like camellias, azaleas, or stone lanterns in my garden. Make obeisance to them now in full bloom and worship them if you like," Zen would say. In the training of the Zen Buddhist monk, he...
Could you read this?
Oh, yes, certainly.
You want to try it?
Okay. Yes, certainly. Sorry. So. I'm getting into this. All right, I will slow up and also keep an eye on my watch.
A little.
Okay. Then I will. All right. In the training of the Zen Buddhist monk, he describes how Zen incorporates local beliefs. Even all the polytheistic gods, including denizens of the air, of the earth, of the heavens, and any other beings who are living only in the realm of superstition and traditional beliefs, are indiscriminately taken into the system of Zen. The Dharani Sutras are recited, we recited one this morning, ancestors are worshipped, the propensity of the ruling powers of the time prayed for, although the question of to whom is still to be settled, the feeding of the hungry ghost, which is observed at least twice a year, is thus one of the excrescences added from the outside. And we do observe that ritual here. The idea is that Zen was originally pure, but that over time, various rituals have been added to it to accommodate an unsophisticated laity. This attitude is reflected in Western beliefs about Zen. Now, I'm not slamming D.T. Suzuki here. He's an excellent writer, and I recommend his writings quite highly. But is this true? What is the history of ritual in Zen? Let's go back to what is the ritual, the role of ritual in Buddhism. Let's go back to the earliest sources, the Pali Canon, in Anguttara Sutta. The Buddha lists 10 fetters from which we must free ourselves, 5 lower and 5 higher. If you Google the 5 lower fetters, you will find that the third one is often listed as rituals. But if you go to the sutra itself, you will find that what Buddha says, it is a wrong grasp of behavior and observances. It's not the rituals, it's a wrong grasp. In other sutras, the Buddha addresses specific rituals. A male Brahmin had a responsibility to keep 3 sacred fires burning. In the Sutra of the Great Sacrifice, the Buddha remarks that there are 3 fires which must be avoided, lust, hatred, and delusion, and that there are 3 fires that should be maintained. The fire of those worthy of gifts, one's parents, the householder's fire, one's children, spouse, servants, slaves, and so forth, and the fire of those worthy of offering, holy people who renounce the world. Okay. So he's not rejecting it, but he's saying that you must understand what the 3 fires are. Another ritual Buddha addresses is that of animal sacrifice. In the Sutra, the Wheel, the Buddha is asked, does the master praise sacrifice? The Buddha replies, I do not praise a sacrifice, Brahmin, nor do I withhold praise from all sacrifice. I do not praise a violent sacrifice at which cattle, goats, rams, chickens, and pigs are slain. But I praise a non-violent sacrifice where various creatures are not slaughtered. The theme of these examples, for me at least, is that rituals are not forbidden, but must be understood and correctly interpreted. Rituals in Buddhism are not for the purposes of appeasing gods so that the cattle will be fertile and the crops will grow, as they may be found in some other places. So ritual is discussed in Buddhism from the beginning. What about in Zen? What does Dogen say about ritual? Well, sometimes he's quite negative. In Bindowa, he writes, after the initial meeting with a good counselor, we need never again burn incense, do prostrations, recite Buddha's name, practice confession, or read sutras. That was a checklist of our morning service. We do all these things every Sunday. Further on, he writes, trying to arrive at Buddha's state of truth through the action of the mouth, stupidly chanting thousands or tens of thousands times, is like trying to reach a southern country by pointing a chariot toward the north. Those who chant endlessly are like frogs in a spring paddy field, croaking day and night. In the end, it is all useless. On the other hand, in the Eihei Shingi, a set of instructions for life in a Zen community, he describes all the actions of all the roles a monk might take in ritual terms. So, for example, when a monk is taking a seat for a meal, there are instructions for bowing, for tucking in the sleeves, for arranging the robes, for placing the legs, and many others. When meeting a senior instructor, a monk is instructed, do not wear the kosa covering the robe, covering both shoulders. A sutra says, when monks meet the Buddha or other monks or seniors, they should not wear the kesa over both shoulders. If they do and they die, they will enter the iron shackle hell. So if you wear your robe wrong, you go to hell. That's taking ritual fairly seriously. For me, the most moving description of the importance of Dogen ascribes to ritual comes when he first observes the robe chant in China, the robe chant that we do every Sunday morning, the great robe of liberation. In fascicle 16 of Shobo Genzo, The Power of the Robe, he writes, once when I was in Song, China, practicing on a long sitting platform, I observed the monks around me. At the beginning of Zazen in the morning, they would hold up their robes, place them on their heads, and chant a verse quietly with their palms together. This was the first time I had seen the robe held up in this way, and I rejoiced, tears wetting the collar of my robe. Although I had read the verse of veneration for the robe, I had not known the procedure. Now I saw it with my own eyes. In my joy, I felt sorrow that there had been no master to teach this to me and no good friend to recommend it in Japan. How sad that so much time had been wasted. He takes this ritual that we perform every Sunday very, very seriously. And I think now we're seeing the same distinction we saw in the Buddha's teaching. Mindlessly chanting like a frog is not of value. But ritual properly performed with the correct understanding has deep, deep meaning. Ritual has been present in Zen from the beginning, and we teach and we sustain it here. We bow, we chant, we burn incense, we have ceremonies. So what are the values of rituals? Everyone will find their own answer. My response to ritual is shaped by two other areas of my life where ritual has been present. My earlier years in martial art, in a Lutheran church, and my years studying the martial arts. I was a member of a Lutheran church which used the full liturgy every Sunday. This varies from congregation to congregation. The congregation I was in was rather high church. And I found the liturgy very useful in the following ways that I do believe apply to the Sangha, to our body here. It creates a sense of sacred space. We come to a special place for our special activities. Now, it's true that there aren't really special places. Our everyday life is our Zen practice, but it's also true that we choose times to become aware of the sacredness of every space. And there is room in practice for setting aside a sacred space, for creating it and sustaining it. It creates also a sense of sacred time. It sets aside a particular time, Sunday mornings, morning and evening Zazen. As with space, every moment of time is our practice, but still it's useful again to have moments when we reflect and realize that. And second, the rituals express a sense of the cyclical element of time. In the Lutheran church, the liturgy has seasons: ordinary time, Advent, Christmas, Pentecost, Easter, back to ordinary time, in a cycle. And we similarly have our cycles and our regular special rituals. We have Buddha's birthday, Buddha's enlightenment, feeding the hungry ghosts. We have the regular full moon service that we performed last Sunday. This helps us to remember that for Dogen and for us, time is not a simple linear progression. It fosters a sense of community. Community is central to the practice of Soto Zen, and our rituals are a way that we create that community. And it marks the major events in life: marriages, death, taking the precepts, ordination. These are all major events, and by using rituals, we give them the gravity that they deserve. To the martial arts. In martial arts, the forms used for training are called kata, and they have a lot of ritual to them. For some arts, they're done by a sole practitioner. Some, they're done in pairs. My arts were primarily judo and aikido, and the katas there are always done with a partner. The katas are used to practice techniques in a very controlled and orderly fashion, as opposed to free sparring or free fighting. From this kata, I learned the following things that I also believe apply to us. First is commitment. The techniques of a martial arts kata only work if both practitioners are truly committed to them. If the kata calls for you to strike your partner, you must truly try to strike your partner. Okay? They are designed to be safe. So if there is something goes wrong and you actually strike your partner, you do no damage. But it's hard to do. It's hard. There's this person that's probably your friend to really actually try to hit them. And it's hard to do it because, you know, if you do try, something is going to happen to you that's going to hurt. But you have to do it. So similarly, the rituals show their benefits only if you are truly committed to them. Bow carefully and bow with full awareness of the meaning of the bow. A bow here is not subservient. It's recognition and respect. When you bow to your cushion, you're showing respect to that cushion for supporting you and giving you comfort, and to the lineage and the traditions that that cushion represents. Mindfulness. In the katas, it's important to be aware of all aspects of the action, both your own and your partner's. High degree of awareness is required. The same level of mindfulness adds a dimension to that simple act of bowing. Flexibility. Although both Zen forms and katas are carefully orchestrated, neither one of them ever goes quite the way you were planning. These actions seem rigid, but it's best to keep a spaciousness about them. The bows and other forms will be a little bit different, or maybe a lot different, every time you do them. Be open to that. That's part of their teaching. The katas permit us to learn basic skills in a controlled situation, and the Zen forms do the same. This, to me at least, is most clear in Zazen. By letting thoughts and sensations arise and pass away, we let the ability to see and avoid, we develop an ability to see and avoid unthinking actions. Forms such as bowing take this to a different level. Now we're not just sitting, now we're actually performing an action. We perform the required action and follow and observe our thoughts and reactions. So now we're learning how to carry on this awareness even when we're moving. And of course, the next action is when we go to temple cleaning, where the actions are not lined out, but still you're keeping that awareness. So there's one more similarity between kata and Zen forms I just want to touch on because I think it's important, but I don't understand it. And I'm hoping some of the senior practitioners here will tell me something about it. When you do a kata well, they don't feel rigid or scripted. Although each step is laid out in advance, they feel spontaneous. Each movement feels like you're making it because that's the only move that you could possibly make. Each time the kata feels like it's the first time, it feels like you are creating it in that moment. Sometimes I get the same sense that Zen forms are like this. The forms sometimes come to life and feel truly spontaneous. It's something I hope to explore, and I hope some people can share their experience with me. That was the talk I had planned to give. Okay, summary. Forms are not an accretion to an earlier pure Zen. Forms have been there from the very beginning, and they have many benefits. Try them and see it to yourself. We could stop there. But if you turn to Dogen, you turn to Dogen at your own peril. And I learned some things right in this talk, and I saw some writings that I've read and chanted many times in a different light. And finally, a few things started to sink in that I must have chanted. I can't count. And so while the above is true, I think it just scratches the surface. The primary ritual of Zen is Zazen. So let's think a moment about Sazi and his ritual. If you want to get better at tennis, you go out and hit your backhand against the wall 10,000 times. If you want to get better at riding your bicycle, you go and ride your bicycle longer and faster and harder. If you want to get better at the piano, you play your exercises and your scales. Practice, practice, practice. Zazen is not like this. We don't do Zazen to get better at something or to reach some goal. You do Zazen because of who and what you are, not because of what you wish to be. Mm. You do Zazen because you are a Buddha, and Zazen is what Buddhas do. That's why we speak of Zazen as having no purpose. It's not to get you somewhere other than where you are. In Fukan Zazengi, may sound familiar, Dogen says, the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It's simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. In Ginjo Koan, he says, when you first seek Dharma, you imagine you are far away from its environs, but Dharma is already correctly transmitted. You are immediately your original self. In Self-Receiving and Employing Samadhi, he writes, when even for a moment you express the Buddha's seal in the three actions by sitting upright in samadhi, the whole phenomenal world becomes the Buddha's seal and the entire sky turns into enlightenment. We chant these often, and for me, it's just starting to sink in. We do Zazen because it is the true expression of who we most truly are. Now, is Zazen really a ritual, or is it an individual exercise? Taigen Dan Layton, who writes in his article, Zazen as Enactment Ritual, in a really helpful book called Zen Ritual, writes, clearly, Dogen sees Zazen as a communal ritual rather than an individual spiritual exercise. Speaking of Dogen's writing in Bindaho, Layton writes, it is clear in context that Dogen considers Zazen the core ritual, but still simply one of the many rituals in the everyday life of the monk's life, and I would say in every practitioner's life. I believe that all the Zen forms are like Zazen. They do not transform us, but they express who we most deeply are. If this is true, then ritual is not simply something interesting or useful that has been added to Zen. It is a core of Zen. It is a way of action that expresses our true reality. It makes no sense to imagine Zen without ritual. We may indeed modify or adapt or create ritual to suit our time and place and situation, but it cannot be eliminated. By experiencing these rituals, we express what the old masters call our original face. That's the rituals. How do we bring this into our daily life when we walk out that front door? I think there are aspects of ritual that can be expressed in all our daily activities. Mindfulness, commitment, compassion. As we wash the dishes, we can experience the smells and feelings and sights of our work. We can understand that what we are doing at that moment is our task and that it is important, and that we take care of the details of cleaning and rinsing and drying and do them thoroughly. Finally, we can treat our dishes with respect and with compassion. We try to remain of the many beings that have brought these dishes to us and of the great service these dishes have performed for us. We do this because that's how Buddhas do their work in the world. And this brings us back to the Dharma gates. We live in the Dharma constantly. We cannot be separate from it. We are an aspect of Dharma. We cannot enter a gate into Dharma. We're already there. But through our rituals and the effects they have on our lives, we wake up to the fact and live in the truth of who we actually are.